Hello and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
And I'm Jordan Crook.
And we are joined by our colleague, the writer and mixtape co-host, Megan Rose Dickey. Megan, thanks for joining us.
What's up? Thanks for having me.
And today we are not going to be very streaming focused. We're going to talk about Us, the new film. We're going to talk about ourselves. It's a really awkwardly titled film.
Introspective podcast.
We're going to talk about the movie Us, but before that, literally in the seconds before we started recording, Megan and Jordan, you just saw the trailer for the new Star Wars movie, which we now know is going to be called The Rise of Skywalker.
What did you think?
I feel like you're bringing a lot more enthusiasm to like leading into this than either of us have to bring back, but
I just figure, you know, if I like put what I put out, I'm gonna, you know, that's how much you get back, right?
I thought it was pretty cool. It seemed dramatic, but I think my issue with Star Wars is that I always forget what happened in the last movie, and I feel like the order I guess maybe I did see Solo, because was Solo the movie before this one, or was that totally unrelated?
It's not completely unrelated, because it's the early story of Han Solo, who is a big factor in the overall story of the Skywalkers, and that he was their buddy, you know? He's part of it. So that's important, but it's not actually a part of the... There's nine... Correct me if I'm wrong, Anthony, but there's nine movies that are supposed to be like a connected saga. And then there are installments in between those that are like kind of like insights into something highly specific, you know, like a separate related story, but not part of the overarching story.
But I think it's just a confusing way to release movies that, I mean, I think most people sort of intuitively understand it. But if you sort of haven't paid attention to Star Wars for the last 2 years and you're like, wait, is this a sequel to The Last Jedi, or is this a sequel to Solo, or is it a sequel to neither? Or like, what's going on here? I think they just wanted to have a Star Wars movie come out every year, and I think they've kind of overloaded people a little bit.
This one's an important one, though, because like it ends the true Star Wars, right? Like the
what they're calling the Skywalker saga.
Right. Okay. So we'll call it the Skywalker saga, but essentially the story that was put out in the first three movies, that story has been now prequelized with a trilogy and then followed up with a trilogy. So then the question is like, how do they end that original thing? And do they end it on a note that leaves people excited for the next generation of Star Wars content? Or does it even leave them feeling satisfied with the, you know, what the new ownership has done with Star Wars? I don't know.
Yeah. I think, I mean, it is that challenge of when both the original trilogy ended and when the prequel trilogy ended. I mean, and I think obviously one of those trilogies is much better than the other, but that was the end. It wasn't like George Lucas was trying to set up something else. I mean, he may have had a vague idea that he wanted to tell more Star Wars stories, but there was no sense of, oh, we're coming, we got to get people to come back to the theater 2 years from now. It was sort of, he felt like he told the story he wanted to tell. And I think, you know, however you may want to criticize those films, that there's no sense that, oh, like when you left the theater, you were just waiting that, you know, Return of the Jedi in particular is not a movie that you, when you're done with, you're like, oh, like there's all these unpicked up threads. Whereas this movie has this kind of tricky task of, it has to wrap up this story. But what they don't want is for us to have that feeling of, great, all my questions are answered. I have seen all the Star Wars I need to see. I am ready to move on to something else. They want you to still be excited and obsessed with Star Wars, but also to feel like this was a satisfying story.
I feel like I've just been wanting to move on from Star Wars for like several years.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is that like you have all these people who either like weren't into it originally and have been force-fed it for like another 15 years, and they're just like, okay, you guys need to be done. And then there's another group of people who like are true fans, right, who like love it so much and may have felt like, you know, like once this story particularly has come to an end, maybe that does make sense for it. It's not really Star Wars anymore, right? Like whatever comes next, like it's not really it's not really Star Wars, you know, and they can kind of just like let it be this thing that was good enough for them. And so like, I don't know, I think it is going to be a really interesting, it's going to be tricky for them for sure.
So, I mean, just going back to this trailer, I mean, did it make you excited about the next movie?
I mean, I'll definitely see the movie. Like, I'll definitely watch it for sure. Because I did remember, because I think I did see the movie before it. And because I recognize the main character. And I recognize the little robot dude who's not R2-D2, but kind of looks like R2-D2.
Sphero or whatever.
Right, I
like
forget
the,
his name.
Yeah, yeah, the Sphero dude.
BB-8, yeah.
Oh my god, I'm a genius.
Isn't that from the OA, though? BB-8?
I don't know. No, I watched half an episode of the OA. Everyone's like, have you watched the OA? And I'm like, no. Why are you all watching it? I don't understand. Maybe we should watch the OA. I don't know.
It's a great show. But there's a character in there called BB-8, like, and she's not a robot. She's just like a woman, like an older white lady.
Wow. Okay.
Or maybe it's BBA. I don't know. Whatever.
Either okay. One's a weird name, but...
There are a lot of weird names. Well, there's one big, real weird name in the OA, but anyway.
So you have seen the OA, Anthony?
I've seen the... you're going to get
first
me.
I've seen the first episode?
No, I've not seen... I've seen it all in order, but I've only seen the first season. Mm. I have not seen the second season yet, because okay. It just came out.
And it's been a few weeks. Jeez.
God. Okay, wow. Well...
That's fair.
We've been watching some stuff. But anyways, I will go see this movie, mostly because I thought that the last two, I don't remember what they were called. What were the last two installments? Episode 8 and 7, I guess. Were
The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi.
Force Awakens and Last Jedi were really good, I thought. Like, I thought they were pretty solid. And, you know, those who listen to the podcast and have for a long time know that I came into the Star Wars world hella late, like full force all at once, and
right,
watched
like
everything
a
like a year ago. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Maybe the way
so
to
I
do
like
it, honestly.
I have a totally different attachment, I feel like, than people who have lived with it for 40 years. Like, my biggest problem with it was that my two biggest complaints throughout, or three actually, was one that I didn't understand about how everyone was breathing fine on like many different planets, and like there was no explanation whatsoever. It's like, as someone who loves sci-fi and space stuff, I'm like, this doesn't work, yo. Like, they're literally fixing planes in an open hangar deck on space, and I'm like in space, like there's space right there.
Although in that case, I think the force field is keeping the air inside.
Yeah, you've said that, but the movies don't, bro. So that's one thing. And then another thing that bugged me was that I don't have the same issues with the prequel trio of movies as much as other people did, except for that, like, Hayden Christensen and Natalie Portman are two of my favorite actors, and it's possibly like the worst I've ever seen either of them in anything. So like, how did you mess that up? They're like two great, amazing, beautiful people, and like somehow I'm not worried about whether or not they're in love, like, at all. Like, so that was another thing. And then the last thing about it was just that because I didn't watch those movies when I was young and had imagination left, they do look old. And I'm like, this looks real old. Like, the way they, like, shoot guns and stuff, they'll have their arm bent and be like, pow, pow, like a punch. And I'm like, yo, that's silly. But I loved it all equally, and I really liked the last ones, you know? I think that makes a lot of sense, given that I'm a Star Wars noob. So I'm excited about this one for sure. The trailer wasn't, like, particularly anything, but, you know, it's, like, Star Wars hype, so that's good. Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, weren't people mad last year, or for like the last movie, that one of the main characters was black? Weren't people like upset about that?
They were sort of upset. It's sort of hard to pull apart, because I think there's a lot of legitimate reasons why, including a number of people on staff, are not crazy about The Last Jedi. I mean, I love The Last Jedi. It's possibly my favorite Star Wars movie, but there are a number of people who don't like it for completely legitimate reasons. But there's also a lot of trolls who, like, or even I don't even know how many there are. They just made themselves heard disproportionately. Mm. And so it started out with, like, they were kind of mad about John Boyega, who was in the last, you know, in Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. being, you know, having a black lead, and in general having a more diverse cast. And then it seemed like a lot of them went after this actress, Kelly Marie Tran, who's an Asian American actress who played this new character, Rose Tico. And apparently she had to like shut down her Instagram because she was just getting so much hate. And it was sort of hard to pull apart how much, I mean, definitely some of that was racist and sexist.
Yeah.
Some of it was people who just did not like The Last Jedi because it wasn't what they wanted from the sort of next chapter in the story of Luke Skywalker, which, again, I think is sort of insane to get too hung up on. But I get it. Like, even as a kid, I, you know, watched those movies and had my own story in my head about what Luke Skywalker did after the Return of the Jedi. And so I can understand that the first time you watch The Last Jedi and it's this much sadder, darker version of that, that you'd be kind of upset about it. But then it kind of just came out in all these kind of hateful and stupid ways. And so it's not, I mean, so part of the question, I guess, is like, how much was The Last Jedi really a movie that people didn't like or was divisive or whatever? Or was it just, you know, a few thousand people who were bitching and moaning online, but most people just went and saw it? I mean, in terms of box office, it didn't make as much money as The Force Awakens, but literally, I mean, in the US, literally no movie has made as much money as The Force Awakens. And it was still the biggest movie of the year. It still made, you know, way over $1 billion worldwide. So it was a huge hit. It just wasn't as big a hit as The Force Awakens. So part of the question is, in general, have people, did people sort of sour on Star Wars after The Last Jedi and Solo, or was it just The Force Awakens, you know, that, you know, there's sort of going to be ups and downs, but people are going to come out for this movie just like they came out for The Force Awakens.
I'm now wondering if I saw The Force Awakens, which is maybe why I felt confused in The Last Jedi.
That would explain it. It would explain a lot.
Because I didn't realize that
they're very tied together.
That, wait, what's the name of the black actor?
John Boyega.
Yeah, I didn't realize John Boyega was also in The Force Awakens. Because he was a totally new character to me in The Last Jedi.
That sounds to me like you did not see The Force Awakens, or you were really tired, or in some other way, in an altered mood while watching The Force Awakens.
Yeah, and I was definitely sober by that point, so I think I would have remembered it, but...
Okay.
I don't know. You probably haven't seen it, to be honest.
Huh.
You should. It's pretty good.
It's good, yeah. And also, The Last Jedi doesn't make a lot of sense if you haven't seen it.
But I still like The Last Jedi, honestly. But
yeah, it's great. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's not a movie that's really designed to stand on its own.
Anthony, what's the one that is called, what's the one called that they steal the plans to...
Rogue One.
Go to the Sun Star? Oh, yeah, Rogue One. What's the name of the base called? The big, scary,
the
circular
Star.
One? There we go. Yeah.
Wait, quick
All right,
question.
Let's move on.
Okay, whoa.
Okay. Okay, we got one more Star Wars question. What is it?
Okay. So, episode 4, A New Hope, which was the first Star Wars movie created.
That's right.
Was it always called episode 4?
No. It originally was just called Star Wars. And then he, I think when he, they did like a, because, you know, back at that point, really, the, if you wanted to see a movie again, the only way you could see it again was in the theater.
Right.
And so, I think in like, 19, you know, maybe a year before Empire Strikes Back, sometime around the time Empire Strikes Back comes out, he puts out a new version of Star Wars, and that's the one where it says, like, episode 4, A New Hope, which is also, I think, around the time where he decided that the Empire Strikes Back was going to be episode 5. Up until then, people had no idea that it was supposed to be the middle of this longer story, which I remember as a kid when I found out, and they hadn't, the prequels hadn't come out yet. I just knew it was episode 4, 5, and 6. And it just sort of blew my mind. I was like, oh my God, there must be an episode 1, 2, and 3 that I just haven't seen yet. Mm. And that was not true at the time. And then eventually it became true, but it was very disappointing.
Hmm.
Yeah, you guys think it's disappointing.
I still haven't actually seen Attack of the Clones, so I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Which one is Attack of the Clones?
The second one. The one where they fall in love.
Episode 2?
Yeah.
Because, okay, so here's the thing. Episode 1's pretty cute because he's little. He's like a baby.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, you're like, oh, cute little munchkin. You know, you're going to be evil one day. And then in episode two is when we start running into a lot of chemistry issues, to be quite frank. And then in episode three, I don't quite recall how everything goes down. I know he like goes fully dark, but I do think episode three was slight recovery, right, from episode two. It's episode two that's like either love or space politics. It's like nothing but those two things.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I can get in. Right. I can get with space politics. I wish they had more chemistry, though, still to this day.
Which, yeah, I don't think it's their fault. I think it's George Lucas's fault.
Yeah, that writing was rough. It's like your face is like from your face is shines beauty and I love you. and then she's like, you also have a beautiful face and I also love you. He's like, our faces shall unite to kiss. I love you.
That's what my dates like, are like. That's what, like,
it is, and like sometimes it's like real dumb stuff. It's like, it is because I love you that I love you. You know, and you're like, wait, what? So anyways, let's please move on, though. I'm done with Star Wars for now.
Okay, let's talk about Us. What I'm going to suggest is, because it's been out for a few weeks and there are a lot of different theories about the film that I think you can't really talk about without spoiling it, is let's just talk really briefly about whether or not we like the movie, and then we can have – so we're going to stay spoiler-free for like a minute or two and then get into spoilers, because I think it's hard to talk about the movie without getting into spoilers.
Yeah.
Sure. I can go first. So I thought that – I saw it real – shortly, like the Monday after it opened, I think. And I thought it was really, really good. I liked it. And it feels a lot like it felt almost more like a summer blockbuster than like a summer horror film. It wasn't, it was scary for sure, but it was like so many equal parts of like scary and funny and thought provoking and artistic that like I almost felt like I was just like letting it happen to me, and it was good, you know. It felt like it just felt like a hot summer night at the movies. Like it encapsulated that feeling to me, especially like with the setting of it. It's set in California and it's kind of like the carnival hot night time feel to it, you know. And it just kind of gave me a lot of those vibes, like a really solid summer blockbuster movie.
Yeah, I accept that as your experience.
Okay. Sounds like you don't. Sounds like you judge it as my experience, but okay.
I'm just like, what do you mean? Anyway, like,
what do I mean? Like, you know what I'm talking about, right? Like,
yeah, but it just, I guess I didn't have those vibes. I also, I was just very tense the whole time. So it wasn't like it's a summer day. I'm just, you know, out in the sun sort of thing. I was like, I'm horrified. I'm waiting for something to like pop out. But yeah, I mean, I definitely enjoyed the movie, and it's, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to not compare it to how I felt after seeing Get Out. So I'm just going to do that, but I think it was a great movie. It's no Get Out, but I also don't think it was necessarily designed to be like another Get Out. Like, I remember before the movie premiered, Jordan Peele was just like, I feel like he said, oh, just like, just a reminder. This is just a horror film. Like, don't like, don't really like read too much into it, essentially. And, yeah, and to me, it was like definitely a good horror film for sure.
Well, I just want to be really clear now, because I feel like you like relabeled how I felt. And so like, it wasn't a feel good movie. That's not what I said. Like, I didn't feel like I was in the sunshine. Like, that's not what the movie made me feel, just to be clear. But like, I thought in my mind, like a summer blockbuster, what I mean by that is like, it's a movie that like touches a bunch of different points, right? Like, it might have a little action, it might be really funny, it might have like a touch of romance, it might have like, you know, some drama, it might like, it just like kind of touches all the points that a movie should touch, you know? And yes, it's a horror film, like its backbone is a horror film. But I also just had like, I felt like it was like a bunch of different things as well. I thought like the funny parts were really funny. That's pretty rare in like a horror movie, right? And like there were some like moments that weren't necessarily scary, but were just beautiful shots. Like they were kind of maybe supposed to be scary, but they were also really interesting and beautiful. So I was like kind of enjoying that as well. I guess that's what I mean more. It did like it doesn't feel like a horror film as in like go to the movies and just know that every single thing is a jump cut and like something gory and something to make you scream. And it was like, it was more balanced than that, I felt.
Yeah, for sure. Anthony, what did you think?
Well, so I mean, it's interesting because Jordan, what you were saying about the summer blockbuster also made sense to me in the sense that it's definitely to me a scarier film than Get Out, which is a movie that I like, but wasn't particularly frightened by. And I think, again, Jordan Peele has been very open about the idea that, like, you know, that Get Out was sort of more like social and political commentary in the form of a horror movie. And this is, like you were saying, more meant to be a movie that just kind of scares the shit out of you. And I think it does that, but it's also like a fun ride. It's like, I mean, in the sense of I was very tense, but, you know, compare it to like going, like last year, there's this horror movie called Hereditary, which I walked out and I just felt devastated and, you know, shaken. And this is more like, you know, there's like things jumping out at you, you laugh and you definitely feel a lot of feelings and stuff. It's not to say that it's not like a really well-made movie, but just it has that kind of slight kind of crowd-pleasing ride quality that I think there are a number of horror films that do have that, but also it isn't sort of the darker, you're going to walk out, you know, feeling terrible about the world kind of movie necessarily. And yeah, I would say overall, you know, this was, in terms of that Get Out comparison, is probably a little bit more up my alley than Get Out was, just because, I mean, I liked Get Out a lot, but I think because it was marketed as a horror film and I felt like especially the last third of it, once you kind of know that there's like that twist that happens and that's great. But everything that happens after that, I didn't find terribly interesting or frightening. And I kind of wanted it to kind of go to weirder, darker places than it ultimately did. When I think Us kind of does. Like Us is like a much, in a lot of ways, in my opinion, a kind of stranger film. A film that doesn't sort of just lend itself to a direct political reading. Although I think there's definitely some political themes in there. And so it's also interesting because it's a movie where, and I'm sure we'll get into this in a little bit, is I think there's some things that have been thought about really carefully in terms of the imagery and how certain things tie together. But like the fundamental conceit in a lot of ways doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense when you think about it. Yeah. And so it's a movie that almost operates by dream logic. At least that was sort of, when I talked to people after they saw the film, I think a lot of people got really hung up on just trying to make everything make sense. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing to do, but in some ways I think that's going to make you just really unhappy with the movie versus if you just, in the same way that like when you watch a David Lynch movie or something, you just sort of say, oh, okay, there are these scary doubles coming out and attacking these people. And there's sort of an explanation towards the end, but the explanation isn't what matters. What matters is like, holy shit, like there are these people carrying scissors and they're played by the same actors and they're acting crazy and they're chasing, you know, the more sympathetic characters. And isn't that really cool? As opposed to like, oh, like, where did they come from? Wait, hold on, what?
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. And I think that like, there's a combination of like that really well-placed imagery and that like, that request to like suspend reality a little bit and just buy into this one thing, this like one thing. And then all of that extra imagery and symbolism that I feel like some people are using to like try to build some, you know, like CIA level spreadsheet with, you know, threads, you know, trying to like solve the math problem of it. Like, I don't think that's why he put them in there. I think they're in there to give you tiny components in your like kind of imagination recipe, right? Like, well, this little piece, you know, there was a reason that this was in the movie, this little tiny subtle thing, and it kind of gives you a little bit of context into why you could theoretically believe this ultimate request of you, right? Like and so I feel like you're right, Anthony, that the people are trying to like, it's fine to do that, you know, and there is a lot, there's so many little layers and symbols to kind of, you know, unpeel and stuff, but there's also just the idea that like all of that was supposed to kind of flow in and out subconsciously to give you the capability to believe it at the end, you know?
Is there anything else you want to say just in terms of the general quality of the movie before we move into spoilers?
No, I want to talk spoilers.
All right. This is the spoiler warning. If you have not seen Us and do not want to be spoiled for it, you should stop listening now. All right, Megan, do you want to kick it off?
Well, let's see. I mean, what you mentioned earlier about people trying to like dissect the like how certain things made sense. And I mean, I think one of those things that came up was around like the tunnels and like, oh, well, what if these people moved? Like did like the alt, what were their names? It was like Adelaide and Red.
Adelaide and Red.
Right. Yeah. So it's just like, I mean, if Adelaide, like, did Red know Adelaide was just like going to be in Santa Cruz, like at this time, like what would have happened if Adelaide like went to Los Angeles instead, like would Red have shown up? Like, are they just like always constantly like following them like underground? But I think you're right in that it doesn't, if you can just accept the fact that, okay, like this is a horror film, like we know what the situation is, like we don't need to think like too much about the actual like logistics of like the underground like tunnel system and like moving with these people.
Yeah, because I think fundamentally like the underground system just doesn't make, I mean, it sort of like makes surface level sense of just like, okay, you've seen it and there are people there, but in terms of those logistics, like, okay, like how exactly does each person mirror the other person? Are they literally following them wherever they go? As soon as you start going down that road, it starts to seem very silly and
yeah,
not feasible. And I don't think that's what's interesting or powerful about the concept.
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly what I felt kind of just like after, once the movie ended, I was just like, oh, well, this entire time I've been thinking that the person above ground was like the quote unquote, like good person, the person I should be rooting for. But then I realized like, oh, well, that supposed good person was actually underground this whole time. And she was just kind of trying to like regain her place in society. So really it's like, I felt like at the end of the movie, there were just like, there was no clear like winner or loser. Like it was just like sad for both of them, honestly.
Right. I mean, there's a clear winner in the sense that one of them is dead and one of them is not.
Yeah.
Wait, guys, which one dies? Remind me. I actually don't remember how it ends. Is it the real original Adelaide that dies or?
Yeah.
So who up, but when you see her die, you still think she's the double, the shadow.
Right.
It looks like she's killing the shadow. And then you realize that that was the original Adelaide who died down there. And that the person you've been rooting for all along is Red, who was the shadow person. Yeah.
But really not a monster, though, you know?
Right, and like right. A shadow person, like a tethered or whatever.
Right, right.
Between. Yeah, I didn't like really get as hung up on all of that as much as like I was just really into everyone's performances. Like I thought that Lupita Nyong'o was amazing.
Oh, obviously. Yeah. Like, and I love the ballet, like that like ballet dance like fight. I thought was like really awesome.
So cool with the music played was just like one of the coolest things I think I've seen in a movie, like scenes wise. I just remember sitting there, I was with two of my friends and all of us were like doing that thing where you like kind of smack them, the person next to you on the knee. Like, look at this, you know,
yeah.
Like, all of us were just like, look. But I also thought that like, you can't leave Elizabeth Moss out of that either. Like, her psycho side is like could have been one of the more like chilling things in the movie to me. Like,
yeah, that was
that lip gloss scene. I like still is in my mind. Like it will never leave. Like her putting on lip gloss like a psycho scary person is etched. It was so weird and real and creepy and ugh, it just got to me.
Right. It's scary, but you also feel like you're seeing somebody trying to understand, like trying to teach themselves how to be a human being and like completely failing in this way that feels interesting. It's scary, but it's not just scary.
Exactly. It's like beyond, it's not beyond scary as in more than scary. It's like a bunch of different things, you know? It's like, ooh, unsettling.
I mean, Winston Duke was also really good, I thought, as, I mean,
Which one was that? He's Abraham, the husband.
I'm sorry. Gabe, who's the husband, and then Abraham is the, you know, double version. And I mean, he's basically been in Black Panther, this, and nothing else. I mean, I think he's got.
What was his name in Black Panther? M'Baku. Yeah, there we go. There we go. I knew I recognized him, but I was like, where do I recognize this guy from? Okay.
Yeah, I'm looking at his Wikipedia page now, and the first movie he was in was Black Panther. Like, that's.
Oh, wow.
He's like kind of come out of nowhere, and he's so good. Nice.
Good for him.
Yeah, he was so funny. Like, he was such the perfect kind of, like, addition. Like, not addition, because he's an integral part of the cast. But he was, like, such a light part of the movie throughout and so great at balancing that. Even in his, like, more dramatic moments, you don't, like, lose touch of the drama and the peril that they're in. You know, he never, like, pulls you so far out. But he's always pretty funny and, like, just delivers it just right for this movie, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess one thing I had a question about, though, because, you know, the scene when, like, the little boy, the tethered boy, he, like, backs into the fire, but it seems as if the boy is, like, controlling him in some way.
Yeah, to go into the fire, yeah.
So why was was the little boy the only one who kind of figured that out somehow, that he could kind of, like, be the one in control?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, like, sort of this implication of, like, that, yes, the behavior and the feelings are mirrored. And I think the sort of the clearest other illustration of that is when the husband character is fighting his double on the boat. And so at a certain point, he's, like, in this desperate situation. And so instead of hitting his double, he smacks his own head against the boat. And that makes his double dizzy, and he falls into the water.
Mm.
So there are, I think that's probably, there's, I think, a couple other things that sort of imply that connection. But it's not like a consistent thing in the sense of, obviously, they're not always mirroring exactly what the surface people are doing. So,
well, and it's also important to remember that Adelaide was like a shadow person. So, like, if technically, like, the humans were, you know, the ones that were actually in control of the movements, then technically that one pairing was role reversed a little bit, right?
So yeah,
that changes one of the dynamics.
But still, the person who we think is the shadow but actually is the original human, this is really hard to talk about. but Red, who comes up and is leading this rebellion, she gives this whole speech of, like, I had to live my life as your shadow. When you got married, I got stuck with Abraham, whether I wanted to or not. When you had children, I had children, whether I wanted to or not. Which is interesting, because we find out that she's not even the original shadow person. So something about that, it's more situation. It's not like biologically. Like,
yeah, that's really interesting and weird. I don't know. Yeah, I don't think it was like hyper consistent throughout, but maybe there is something to be said about that kid, like, if you are aware of it and can tap into it, then you can control it, kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? But just no one had been as keenly aware of it as this kid who was like, I can actually just take steps if I'm, like, focused on it. You know what I mean? Like, and just get it done.
And on the flip side, that it's this other kid who's, like, feral and is very not in control of his own feelings. And so would not resist in the way that maybe some of the more adult shadow people would. He's just going to go with it because he doesn't realize that it's doing something really bad to him.
And then there are some other little things in the movie that just make it great, like that are kind of not necessarily unique, but like tropes that are used, like the youngest shadow kid that crawls kind of like a spider, you know, like that just feels like a very, like, common. Anything that moves like a spider, we are inherently afraid of. Like, that's just not a way to move that we're comfortable with. You know, like, humans don't enjoy the way crabs and spiders move. Like, they're like, no, this is not cool. And so, you know, it gets used in horror movies all the time, like random spider movement, you know? So, like, oh, let's just throw a touch of spider moves in here. But it's good. It doesn't feel like he's tapping into all these tropes. It feels like, oh, yeah, like, got that good spider feels. like I deserve when I watch a good summer blockbuster horror movie.
I also like the sounds in the movie. Like, though, I mean, I think the biggest thing is the sort of voice Lupita Nyong'o does as Red, which I know she sort of got some criticism for because question of like whether or not it was sort of reinforcing this stereotype that people who can't speak normally, you know, are monstrous or scary in some way. But I mean, as a performance, and I mean, she's apologized for that. I mean, for sort of talking about it that way, but mm-hmm. as a performance, it's really terrifying and really well done. And then, but also like the sounds that the kids make at the shadow versions of themselves. I mean, the performance, I mean, like to imagine adults who are really talented actors playing doubles of themselves, that's already impressive. But like to see these kids giving these two completely different performances and being so creepy and otherworldly as the shadows. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was just, definitely really great performances also, all around.
All the little like fun, not Easter eggs, but the little bits with like the movie starts with him zooming out from the rabbits. And then the movie constantly goes from like this very zeroed in view of this one family to then their doppelgangers to then the whole world underneath and below, then to zooming out to the Hands Across America doppelgangers, right? Like mm-hmm. it does the exact same thing as the original shot of the movie did. There's also like the Hands Across America like commercial at the beginning, and then the way it ends with the Hands Across America and the idea of like Reaganomics, like even more.
Yeah, did you guys to, like, remember that economic as divide. Being a thing?
No.
Hands Across America? No, I don't remember it. I had to like go and look into it more because I know it's like it's referenced constantly. The point is that I didn't know really a lot about Hands Across America other than it's like a common cultural reference. Like people talk about it a lot. And I know it was, I knew that it was connected to Reagan, but I didn't really know much more about it. And I don't think you have to know much more about it. I think it's the Reagan symbolism more so than anything else. You know, like the...
The other thing I didn't catch was until somebody told me about it later was the fact that all the red jumpsuits and the gloves they wear, I mean, it seems obvious when they pointed it out, was references to the Thriller video we see at the beginning and that she's just a big fan of Thriller, which I thought was both clever and also kind of dumb.
There's also like things like the scissors, right? Like the scissors are like what other weapon is like a dual, like represents duality like that. And then there's something that has to do with water as well. Like a lot of water symbolism in the movie. But that was really one of my friend's theories. I'd have to talk to her more before I relay that to the rest of the world. But there's something there, I'm sure, if we thought about it.
So I guess the one question I had logic-wise that I've been arguing with some of my friends about is at the end, the person that we think of as Adelaide is driving in the truck. And then we get this flashback and we finally see the full version of what happened that night when she was young and that she and Red switch places. And some people interpreted that as, oh, she's just remembering now who she is, versus I interpreted that as she's always known. It's just we as the audience are finding out who she is, but this isn't like a surprise or shock to her.
Yeah, I feel like I'm with you on that one because I think there were hints that I mean, I feel like there were clues that she did know who she was. Like, I don't know, like, she felt, like, very sure that when they were back in Santa Cruz that someone was kind of trying to, like, reach her in a way. And,
yeah, like, I bet if you watch it back a second time, you can see a tinge of guilt in that performance as opposed to just straight-up anxiety. Like, a little bit of fear, too. Like, I did something to someone in these parts, you know, like,
which is more interesting too.
Yeah. And then like when they were on the beach, like the Caroline Moss, what's her name? Whatever. Yeah.
Elizabeth Moss.
From Elizabeth Moss. She was like talking to Adelaide, and then Adelaide at one point was just like, oh, like I don't, she said like something about talking. The way that she speaks. She's like, I don't like to talk or something like that.
Yeah.
Which kind of, because like she had to probably very quickly learn how to speak. Because like when she was a kid and like came back or was like now like in the regular world, I guess, like it seemed like she wasn't really like talking to her parents at all because she just like literally did not know how to. So I feel like that's something that she would have realized that, oh, well, I was just underground and we just grunted and now I'm like above ground and now I need to figure out how to talk. Like, I feel like that's not something that you like forget. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think we're all on the same page that it was like a reveal for the audience, but that, and I bet you if you watch it a second time and you are looking for it, it shows that she knows, you know?
Yeah. Great. I'm glad we established that you're all on my side on this. And then my friend.
But I did read some of that stuff that people were just like, oh, like she had just been like suppressing this memory and it wasn't until it was all over that she remembered. And it's like, I don't know about that.
No.
It just seems less interesting to me too. It's more interesting if she's guilty and that she's like trying to protect this new identity that she's established for herself than if she's just deceived herself and then suddenly it's like, oh, right.
Well, like, yeah. Another question, like, I mean, there's so many logistical questions. Like, was the little girl, like, original, real Adelaide, like, lured down to the little Vision Quest thing, like, by her doppelganger, by Red?
Yeah, or, like, what was calling her? Yeah, like, her,
what made her go down there? And then if she didn't, if she was doing it on her own, did she then call Red up to her to meet her at Vision Quest by going to it? Like,
I saw it as a mutual thing. Like they were like drawn to each other, but I don't know. I mean, that's just my own reading. I don't think I think you could interpret it like a million different ways.
Yeah.
Well, good for Jordan Peele. I think it's another great one. I like,
yeah.
And I think that it's cool that last time it was really, really straightforward and clear with Get Out. Like he had this kind of allegory and like played it out from start to finish and made sure it was all real clean lines, you know, around what that was. And this time it's like, there's some fun in being able to, and it feels very Jordan Peele as well to be like, don't read into this. And then to throw like a billion symbols at us. Be like, no, don't worry about it. Don't read into it too much. It's like, you're, you know what we're going to do. so like, you know, I liked that. I like that it's not quite as like clear what everything could mean and that there are a bunch of different explanations and I like that.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, do you think there's going to be a sequel? Because, I mean, there are still, because the shadow people are, they were definitely still around.
I think he probably set it up to, like, give himself the option, you know? Like,
Yeah.
He could do it. I feel like he's the kind of person that really likes going at these individual stories and, like, perfecting them as opposed to, but maybe that's like a new challenge for him. I don't know. He could do whatever he wants at this point. That's the thing about Jordan Peele. He's like so beloved and he's done such a great job that he's like the boy. He's the it boy. Everybody wants some Jordan Peele content.
Yeah. I mean, I would also say that the problem with the sequel, which it doesn't mean that it's not going to happen or that it won't be good if it does happen, but it, I think, will inevitably highlight some of the ways in which the world doesn't make a lot of sense. And so like this whole thing with the shadows, like joining hands across the world, I definitely had this moment of it's a beautiful image and this incredibly creepy image, especially how still they are, that they just don't seem to want anything. Like they're just there.
Yeah.
But there's also this element of, okay, well, what's the next day like? Like, do they just all like, all right, well, we joined hands and now we have to just go about our lives on the surface now and kill the remaining surface people? Or I think in some ways it sort of is such a climax that it's hard to imagine anything following that, even though obviously the situation has not actually been resolved.
Well, and it looks a little bit like they won, you know, like it seems like.
Yeah.
99.9% of the time, the doppelgangers killed the humans.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that we followed a family that because of their connection to it potentially were a bit better at fighting it. But yeah, I don't know what follows next. You know, it seems like they won.
Right. In this world, I have definitely been killed by my doppelganger.
Oh, me too. My doppelganger knew exactly where to find me. I was on my couch. She was like, it's time. I was like, okay. Let's do it.
I think I would outsmart my dops.
I knew it. I knew you were going to say that.
I knew you were too. I knew it.
I'm not going to submit to my doppelganger. Jesus.
Good, good. And one of us has to survive.
One of us has to fight back and tell our story.
Yes. Tell our story, Megan.
Me and Anthony are literally going to be like, hey, you're late.
Yeah. Cool. Well, do we have any final thoughts about us before we wrap up?
Happy Friday is my thoughts. Or Saturday, I guess, for you guys. Happy Saturday. Happy weekend.
All right. Yeah. As always, I will just do a quick reminder that if you enjoy this podcast, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts or on Pocket Casts or on any other podcast app that you like. You can also leave us a review in Apple Podcasts. You should also check out Mixtape, the semi-regular podcast from Megan and from Henry Pigavit, which we can't talk. We're not always that consistent either. But I would like to hear more Mixtape, so I'm just giving you a little
nudge. It'll be back. We'll be back.
All right, everybody go check it out. Have a great weekend.
Peace.
Bye.